The views expressed on Skeptically Speaking do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the University of Alberta, the Students' Union, or CJSR. Bring it on, the skeptics await your letter. Your call, tweet, homing, pigeon, whatever. Desiree Shell gonna raise a little hell, metaphorically that is, cause we're Skeptically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Skeptically Speaking. I'm your host, Desiree Shell. You lovely regular listeners out there know that this show attempts to give you a little background on a variety of science topics so that you can go out into the world and be skeptical. And by skeptical, we of course mean requiring evidence before you believe in something that you hear or see or read. But radio shows aren't everyone's favorite form of getting their science on. Some people are more inclined to learn through music. Today we'll be joined by Baba Brinkman, the Vancouver hip-hop artist behind The Rap Guide to Evolution and the new rationalist anthem Off That. You may remember a speaking up back in the day about a lovely little project called Virtual Drinking Skeptically, an idea developed by programmer Brian Gregory. Many cities currently host Drinking Skeptically or Skeptics in the Pub, which is basically an opportunity for skeptical people to get together with other skeptical people and talk about skeptical things, which is wonderful if you live in one of those cities and you don't work an evening shift and you like pubs. So for the rest of us, there is Virtual Drinking Skeptically. People from all over the world attend this video chat, where the drinking is not at all mandatory, but scintillating discussion is. It's the next best thing to being at a real live Skeptics in the Pub, or possibly even better if you happen to be a bit antisocial. So Brian has recently added a new component to Virtual DS, the special guest. He's coercing interesting people in the skeptical community into spending a few hours on camera answering questions, discussing topics, and generally just hanging out. And I am scheduled to put myself on the chopping block on May 1st. Yes, if you want to ask me random and potentially uncomfortable questions, you now have yet another forum. And on May 21st, both Derek and Swoopy from the Skepticality podcast will take their turn. This is a really fun idea, and I'm very pleased to be a part of it. You can check out virtualds.wordpress.com for more information and specific times. We'd also like to say hello to a new station, The Coast 89.7 Cape Breton in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia. That's our first maritime rebroadcaster, which means we officially air from sea to shining sea. So thanks very much to all of you at The Coast for allowing us to share some science and skepticism on your fine station. And now to speaking up. We're here today with Jason Brown, who's a British expat living the life in Australia as an IT consultant. He's active in both the Sydney Skeptics and the Sydney Atheists groups and was one of the first members of the Stop the Anti-Vaccination Network Facebook group. He was also the person who started the Vote Reichi campaign on Twitter, which was successful in helping Dr. Reichi of the Skeptic Zone podcast win the Shorty Award in health. And if you'd like to hear more about that, we interviewed Dr. Reichi on episode 45. Jason's current project is Skepticator. Welcome to Skeptically Speaking, Jason.
Good morning, Desiree. How are you doing?
I'm well. It's definitely not morning here.
Oh, it definitely is here.
Oh, see, you living in the future is never going to stop being funny to me. So tell us about Skepticator.
Skepticator is my current major time project, and it's taking up quite a lot of my free time at the moment. It's basically a Twitter and blog aggregator for skeptical content. I noticed a while ago that I do a lot of sort of online engagement with the forces of woo, and I noticed it was kind of difficult sometimes to find skeptical responses to some of this stuff. And I figured, you know, since this is what I do for a job, you know, enabling collaboration, I'd build something that would help. So what I'm doing is pulling together 169 at the moment, at the time of our speaking, 169 different blogs, about 5,500 articles at the moment. And I've made them searchable and easily updatable and generally kind of a nice, easy blog aggregator for the skeptic community to use.
So it aggregates skeptical websites that people submit to you, or do you go out and find them?
It's a blend of the both. You can submit your own through skepticator.com. Quite easy. There's a little box on the left-hand side. You just enter your feed URL. Off it goes, gets your data, pulls it back. Or I can go out and find them myself. In the early stages, it's been mostly me, but they're now starting to trickle in from other people. I got about 15 yesterday, for instance.
Wonderful. Okay, you say skeptical tweets. How does this work?
Okay, well, for those who don't really know much about Twitter, Twitter is what you'd call maybe a microblogging service. It's very short status updates based sort of on the SMS messaging protocol. You get 140 characters to get your point across. And you can reply to other people, engage with other people, sort of there's a direct message back channel. But the main thing that I focus on is hashtags, which is where you tag your topic within your tweet with a hash and then the name of your hashtag. So, for instance, there's one called the skeptic hashtag, which is hash skeptic. I track that through search on Twitter, and I display it on the front page of Skepticator. I do the same with the 1023 campaign from the UK against homeopathy. And I'll be shortly doing the same with the Stop AVN campaign and the TamOz hashtag for Tam Australia, which is happening this year.
Wonderful. So what you're saying is people should really be using the skeptic hashtag or else they're being left out.
People should, yes. Or they should tell me which hashtag they're using and I'll add it.
So what are the benefits of something like Skepticator over Google Reader?
The thing with the general search engine like Google Reader or with, you know, a general thing, it's not skeptically focused, and most people with their Google Reader account, they'll have things that are not necessarily just the skeptical feeds. They'll have news feeds, they'll have, you know, their personal stuff, their Facebook stuff, and it's all kind of mixed in. Skepticator is purely focused on skepticism, with the usual little crossover to, you know, the atheist blogs that have some skeptical content, but it's purely focused content. So if you want to look up what the skeptical opinion is on homeopathy, for instance, come to Skepticator. Type in homeopathy, you'll get just skeptical content. You won't get any of the woo-mongers selling their homeopathy to you.
You know, it's interesting that no one's actually done this before, because I would have expected that Tim Farley of whatstheharm.net and skeptools.com would have already done this, or at least suggested it to others. Yeah,
I was going to mention Tim. Yeah, Tim and I have got a kind of a similar focus in that we want to enable better skepticism online through all of these tools, you know, some free tools, some expensive tools. But we've both got the same sort of thing going on. It's not the first skeptical blog aggregator that's happened. I've found a few others in the process of building it, but usually they seem to have fizzled out at sort of, you know, 30 blogs maybe. This one I'm pushing really hard to get as many skeptical blogs in as possible and keep the momentum going. I mean, it can be a difficult thing to do online sometimes, keep the momentum up. It takes a lot of time, but I'm already online for my work. I'm already online a lot for this engagement kind of stuff. So it's not too difficult for me to keep the momentum going.
And actually, you mentioned when you and I first started talking about you doing this segment, I believe you only had 100 websites.
I did. It's been growing rapidly in the last few days. When I first launched it, there were about 60, I think, which I'd found myself. And now it's starting to build its own momentum, and it's kind of going to be out of control soon, I think.
Well, you speak about momentum, and you have some plans for the site.
Well, I've implemented one of the plans for the site over the last couple of days since we last spoke. Search was one of the things that it really needed to be able to drill down into the results. You know, when we first looked at it, it was quite a linear experience. You know, you just had a list of what was going on right now on the blogs, and that was it. Since then, I've implemented a sort of a complex search engine behind it using a Microsoft product, and it's actually working not too badly. There's a few little bugs, but we're getting there. I'm going to add some social networking links to it, Facebook, StumbleUpon, that sort of thing. It already does Twitter. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of plans that are really sort of sketchy at the moment, but I'd love community input to tell me what I ought to do with it. That would be great.
You were also talking about having regionally targeted content.
Oh, yes. Well, I mentioned I was probably going to put the Tam Australia hashtag on for Twitter and the Stop AVN, which is the Stop the Australian Vaccination Network hashtag. I'll probably be targeting those to Australian readers primarily. Being that I'm in Australia, it's kind of a logical thing for me to do. I'd also be interested in hearing from other people in other regions, you know, European, North American, Canadian like yourselves, and telling me what sort of regional content that they're up to at the moment and what they'd like targeted to their countries. It would be nice.
So all people would have to do is just create a hashtag and let you know.
Yes, they can let me know through Twitter or they can find me on Facebook. I'm quite prominent on Facebook, just Jason Brown. And they can also email me, jason@snacker.co.uk, which is on the bottom of the Skepticator website.
Perfect. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Thank you. Anytime.
So you can check out the project for yourself at skepticator.com, and we'll be right back after this.
You are listening to Skeptically Speaking, either through the wonder of podcast technology or the generosity of one of our rebroadcasting stations. Skeptically Speaking is broadcast live out of CJSR 88.5 Edmonton, Alberta at 6 p.m. Mountain Time every Friday. If you're not in Edmonton, you can still hear the broadcast live on our Ustream.tv feed, which you can find by clicking on the Listen Live link on our website at skepticallyspeaking.com. You can also participate in the chat room and submit questions. During the week leading up to each show, you can find information on the upcoming episode and guest, and submit a question to be asked on the air. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Our deepest thanks go to those stations that donate their valuable airtime to our program, including Citywide LPFM 99.1 in Madison, Wisconsin, CILY Kootenai Cooperative Radio 93.5 FM in Nelson, 96.5 FM in Crawford Bay, and 107.5 FM in New Denver, British Columbia, CJAI, Amherst Island Public Radio, 92.1 FM in Stella, Ontario, CLHI, Rosslyn Radio, 101.1 FM in Rosslyn, British Columbia, Freethought Radio, WPRR, Public Reality Radio, 1680 AM in Grand Rapids, Michigan, CIDO, 97.7 FM in Creston, British Columbia, UMFM, 101.5 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, CFAD, 92.1 FM in Salmo, British Columbia, and CKOA 89.7 The Coast in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
Welcome back to Skeptically Speaking. I'm your host, Desiree Schell. I have a brief update about that Speaking Up segment that we just heard on Skepticator. Jason and I recorded that piece a few weeks ago, and since that time it's grown to 270 feeds and over 10,000 articles. He's also created a mobile device site which is up and searchable. The man is on fire. Again, check out the Skeptical News Aggregator at skepticator.com for all your skeptical news aggregation needs. And we are on the line with Baba Brinkman, a former tree planter with a Master's in Medieval and Renaissance English Literature, who's currently a rap troubadour in the service of science. Welcome to Skeptically Speaking, Baba.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Desiree.
So that, sir, is a varied resume.
Well, maybe it's just because I have a short attention span, and I try to change careers every couple years as much as possible.
So you recently put out Off That, and that's a song that's subtitled The Rationalist Anthem. And that's quite a long way from how this kind of all started out with Chaucer. So can you tell us a bit about the Canterbury Tales project? How did that all start?
Well, you could look at that as a form of skepticism as well, because when I tried to initially convince my English professors that that rap was a form of literature, skepticism was their response to that. Like, what are you talking about? But my argument as a literature student was, if we study Chaucer and we study Shakespeare, we need to start studying Jay-Z and Eminem and B.I.G. and Nas, because they are the rhymed lyrical storytellers of today and fulfill the same social function as Chaucer and Shakespeare did for their times. So I wrote my thesis basically trying to outline that concept and parallels between the Canterbury Tales and rap, and especially the sort of social context the poetry takes place in, the competitive atmosphere. And then I wrote the rap Canterbury Tales as a sort of, entertainment version of my thesis, basically.
And you took that that performance to secondary schools.
I did, yeah. I mean, first I brought it to Fringe Festival. So I took it to the Edinburgh Fringe in Scotland, and it got really good reviews there and a really good response. I think the British in general are quite Chaucer literate. And then Cambridge University actually sponsored me, because someone from Cambridge saw it in Edinburgh, and they organized a tour of 30 high schools around the UK. So I was the introduction to literature for British high school students for a whole year, and I'd be chaperoned from school to school by a Cambridge professor of English who'd say, "Oh, you think literature is boring, do you? Well, check this out." And then I'd do the Canterbury Tales rap, and it was their sort of get the kids hooked scheme.
Did it work?
If I was science-minded when that whole project started, I would have tried to track the data and see whether the the enrollment in literature programs went up after I visited a school or not. But as it stands, all I have is anecdotal evidence, which is teachers saying the kids get keen after you come in and wrap the Canterbury Tales for them. They go, wow, where can we read these stories? And they take more of an interest and it boosts enthusiasm. So I'll take their word for it.
So how did you go from Chaucer to Darwin then?
Well, I performed the Rap Canterbury Tales for a few years, and after the show, sometimes people would say, what are you going to do next? Are you going to do Shakespeare? Are you going to do the Odyssey? And I would always be like, I don't know, I'm kind of waiting for the right project to come along. And in 2008, it did. And the form that it took was author of the book The Rough Guide to Evolution is Dr. Mark Palin, and he's a geneticist at the University of Birmingham. And he contacted me and said, next year is Charles Darwin's 200th birthday, and I'm organizing a celebration for Darwin Day, which will be an academic conference, and I need some entertainment. And I was wondering if you could write me some evolution raps. Would you be able to do for Darwin what you did for Chaucer, were his exact words. And it took me about 10 seconds to think about it, and then I was like, yeah, that's it. That's the project.
So what were the parameters there? Just make Darwin interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I think he originally said, can you do a rap version of The Origin of Species? And I read The Origin of Species and decided that it didn't quite have the narrative hook that I would need to just do a straight adaptation. I needed to find a way to, to make it feel relevant and sort of emotionally impactful, or find a way for people to be able to connect to it, basically. So I just read my way through a lot of evolution books to try to find the inroads, and the two sort of most accessible points of entry I found for non-evolution experts are evolutionary psychology, so the evolutionary view of human behavior, and mimetics, so looking at culture and science and the arts as a sort of analogy for evolutionary processes. So, I mean, the basic parameter was make it entertaining, make it scientifically accurate, and make it about Darwinian science. And the scientifically accurate part was a good challenge, because Professor Palin actually said, if I'm going to sponsor your rap guide to evolution, you have to send me drafts of the lyrics so that I can correct them for scientific accuracy. That was one of the conditions. So I did. I sent him emails with my lyrics, and he came back with some pointed corrections just in terms of trying to accurately convey the science. And so now at the end of this whole project, I can say I have the first ever hip-hop show that's peer-reviewed.
Oh, that's brilliant, sir. I guess Chaucer can't do that for you.
No. I mean, Chaucer scholars have generally been pretty positive about the treatment that I gave Chaucer. Not all of them. I hear I have some detractors. I usually hear about the detractors secondhand. Like, there are some Chaucer professors who really hate what you're doing, but I usually hear about the unfriendly professors from the friendly professors who defend me. So I'm not too worried about that. But with the science thing, I really felt like, I wanted to make sure and get it right, because there's so many misconceptions about how evolution works and what it means, and the story it tells about where we come from. And I just really wanted I wanted the show to represent the modern scientific perspective on Darwin, and not all of the misconceptions and sort of philosophical anxiety that surrounds him.
What exactly did you know about evolution when you were approached initially?
I had read a few popular science books. I had read The Third Chimpanzee. I'd basically read everything Jared Diamond wrote, because I got really hooked on him for a while. I'd read a couple of Richard Dawkins books, and I'd read Consilience. And I did first year biology courses. When I was first starting in university, I was planning originally to do a biology English double major. And then I took a step back and looked at my grades. And my grades were a lot better in English than they were in biology.
Right.
I think it's partially that I just didn't have the patience for cell biology and microbiology and the sort of math side of it. I was really interested in ecology and evolution and the macro questions, the macro view of it. But I guess it was, once again, an attention span thing, because I was good with essay writing and interpreting poetry. Just sort of instinctively, so I went with that. But I just remained interested in it. And I actually argued in my master's thesis that Chaucer anticipates Darwin in the Canterbury Tales.
Oh, you have to go further with that to explain.
The rationale is, for those of you, for the listeners who are unfamiliar with the Canterbury Tales, Chaucer creates a poetry competition where he has 29 pilgrims telling stories, and whoever tells the best story gets a prize, a free meal to be provided. And each of them has a very different style of telling their tale, and the way the judging happens is there's a host that is the sort of the first responder and the one who makes the call as to which are the good stories and which are not, but also the other pilgrims become this sort of active feedback, and they interrupt some of the stories. If they don't like one of the story being told, they'll sometimes have, there will be like a hostile takeover by the audience, and they'll tell the speaker to shut up. So then I thought, well, the three essential qualities of evolution are variation, heritability, variation, selection, and heritability. So there has to be variation, there have to be differences, and those differences have to have consequences, and those differences have to be heritable in some form. And Chaucer really seems to have emphasized variation and selection and heritability in the Canterbury Tales. Variation of style, because the techniques and sort of approaches and choice of rhyme versus alliteration versus prose are on display in the Canterbury Tales. Selection happens when the hostile audience promotes some of the tale tellers as very adept and tells others that that they're horrible and they need to shut up. And heritability as the sort of passing of tales on through adaptation and translation. So I think Chaucer really intuited the cultural process of evolution, but didn't connect it to the way organisms evolve in the natural world, whereas Darwin was the one who recognized a very similar pattern that was going on in nature through differential survival. And so I think they had similar kinds of minds, but Darwin was better poised to, you know, as a naturalist, to recognize how far that equation can go in terms of explaining where things come from, whereas Chaucer just figured it out as, you know, this is how poetry works in society.
You have just blown my mind, sir.
It took a little convincing to try to pass that by the oral defense of my English thesis, because biology is not always the most popular subject with English professors. But I think medievalists tend to be more sympathetic towards it than postmodern literature profs. So anyway. It stayed in there, and I got an A.
Well, you also make an explicit comparison, actually, in the show between your process of trying out new rhymes and natural selection, specifically the process of freestyling.
Yeah, that's performance feedback revision. And it's another way to think about it, but in its essence, I think the selection and natural selection can be thought of as a form of feedback, and that is the environment telling the genome what's working and what doesn't work. And I think, a lot of this stuff is from the philosopher Dan Dennett, he's got his universal Darwinism concept, and you can think of it working on the level of our thought patterns. You know, the things that we call consciousness, the ideas we call consciousness, are the synaptic connections that have been promoted or recognized by the brain as the ones that work the best for our agendas, and the other ones get suppressed. So there's a variation and selection going on at the level of neurons, which produces consciousness, and that variation and selection process is pretty much the same one that produced the forms of organisms, and it's the same process that sculpts the progress of culture as well in our literal selections when we express our taste. And and freestyle, of course, gives us the mutation. So that randomness is necessary to have variation to select from. And some things that seem random, obviously there's going to be a causal explanation for where the freestyle comes from, but it sure appears to be random, you know, both to the audience and the rapper. And I think it's a sort of necessary component of the creative process, improvisation.
You know, I think your analogies work very well for our audience.
Well, that's because they're also Homo sapiens, so they can't help but relate.
Ooh. You also remix songs to create new songs. I'm just wondering, can you make an evolutionary parallel out of that as well?
Biomimicry may be a good one.
Ooh, okay.
I hadn't actually thought about that before, but you know, if you've got a harmless species of fly that's mimicking a wasp in order to deter predators, maybe that's the equivalent of a middle-class Canadian white academic doing a sort of gangster rap satire in order to make a point. Although I don't think many people take the sort of gangster rap remixes I do very seriously as an actual deterrent threat, even if the originals that I borrowed the concepts from were meant as deterrent threats. Don't mess with me.
Audience, if you would like to play draw your own totally oversimplified evolutionary parallel with us, email live at skepticallyspeaking.com or tweet Skeptical Radio. We have a chat room question, actually.
This is from Dr. Lannis. He asks, what are the best rhymes for phenotypical and eukaryote?
Well, I haven't actually written any, but I could be like, if you don't believe that I'm a good rapper, then don't be so cynical, because you can listen to the way that it expresses, well, I express it when I'm phenotypical.
Okay.
Wait, what was the second one again?
Eukaryote.
Okay. So learn as much as you can about creationism and then do what you can personally. You bury it, because it needs to be suppressed like a digested eukaryote. That right there is a new rhyme. That's freestyle. That was a new variant.
Beautiful. Okay, let's go back here. When was the first time that you actually performed this live?
The Rap Guide to Evolution, the first time I performed it live was in Cambridge, because Dr. Palin organized not just a single show for Darwin Day, but a sort of Darwin Day tour. And we did one show at Cambridge at the chemistry department lecture hall, which was just sort of advertised in the university community. And then and one show at the University of Central London, and one in Shrewsbury, near where Darwin grew up, and one at the University of Birmingham, which was sort of the main event on his birthday on February 12th. So Cambridge was the first shot.
And the response was?
The response was really positive once I got going. But, you know, I think I get the same thing all the time. People can see a review, a five-star review of the show, and hear people rave about it. And they're still going to sit in the crowd and be like, okay, chances are this is going to be horrible. I think of myself as a sort of cultural extremophile, because I dwell in environments of extreme hostility at all times. Being a white Canadian rapper with evolution as my subject, people just think it's going to be a joke or a gimmick. And then I get to have the fun of converting them in every show. And you know, you wouldn't believe how often I hear people being like, oh my God, that performance was amazing. I mean, I really had low expectations. I thought it was going to be horrible. You know, no offense, but you blew my mind. And you know, I don't really take offense to that, because it's to be expected. And yeah, the crowd in Cambridge were, you know, skeptical as well. But one thing that was great about it is that there was a writer from Science Magazine there, and he loved it, and he blogged about it and wrote this whole thing up on Science Magazine. So after the first performance, within 24 hours, I had a quote from Science Magazine saying, you know, this will do more to convince your students of, or convince young people of evolution's validity than any BBC documentary. He combines the confrontational manner and evolutionary expertise of Richard Dawkins with the lyrical sophistication and satirical bite of Eminem, and da-da-da. Just all these really amazing, great quotes, which then I could use to sort of reach out to professors of biology and organizers of festivals and other people to say, you know, give this a chance, because look what Science Magazine said about it, which was just the total stroke of luck, because there were like 20 people in the audience in a big lecture hall, very poorly attended show, rainy night in Cambridge, no, you know, reputation to speak of, but one of them turned out to be a great proliferator of the concept.
You know, I was trying to think of this in terms of a Venn diagram earlier on. Science people and hip-hop people. How much overlap is there between those two circles?
Well, I think there's a lot of people who grew up on hip-hop who didn't end up getting a career in the hip-hop industry. And I think a lot of those people ended up working in science. So, you know, there's rap fans taking over all the jobs in the world right now. It's a generational thing. When I was an undergraduate, professors were not sympathetic to rap, and now more and more professors are sympathetic to rap. And, you know, my experience with that is in literature departments, but I don't see why that wouldn't be the case with science departments as well. You know, rap is a medium. Rap is a way of expressing ideas, and those ideas can be about anything, really. You just, whatever you're keen on, you can channel. So in a way, I'd say science is quite similar in that respect, because there's not really anything that you can't shine the light of science on.
And on that note, I'd like to give people a chance to hear what the heck we're talking about. So we're going to hear Natural Selection from the album Rap Guide to Evolution by Baba Brinkman.
Whoever is led to believe that species are mutable will do good service by conscientiously expressing his conviction. For only thus can the load of prejudice by which this subject is overwhelmed be removed.
So what you know about natural selection? Go ahead and ask a question and see where the answer gets you. Try being passive aggressive or try smashing heads in and see which tactic brings your plans to fruition. If you have an explanation in mind, then you're wasting your time, because the best watchmaker is blind. Takes a certain base kind of impatient mind to explain away nature with intelligent design. But the truth shall set you free from those useless superstitious beliefs in a literal Adam and Eve and that Edenic myth, because their family tree is showing some genetic drift. Take it from this bald-headed non-celibate monk with the lyrical equivalent of an elephant's trunk. It's time to elevate your mind state and celebrate your kinship with the primates. The weak and the strong, who got it going on? We lived in the dark for so long. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on. Creationism is dead wrong.
The view which most naturalists entertain, namely that each species has been independently created, is erroneous.
Okay, it's time to reveal my identity. I'm the manifestation of tens of millions of centuries of sexual selection. Best believe I'm the best of the best of the best of the best of generations of competitive pressure genetically. But don't get upset, cause we got the same pedigree. You and I will find a common ancestor eventually if we rewind geological time regressively. And I can say the same for this hibiscus tree and this lizard and this flea and this sesame seed. And if you still disbelieve in what your senses perceive, I could even use this rhyme as a remedy, cause there's so much variation in the styles in this industry and differential survival when the people listening decide what they're into and what really isn't interesting. You could thrive like Timberlake on a Timberland beat, or go extinct like Vanilla Ice and NSYNC. It's survival of the fittest, but fitness is a tricky thing. It changes from place to place, from winter to spring. But the real question in this social scientific simile is heredity, whether we inherit our techniques from our predecessors or invent them independently. But then we're talking memes, and that's a different thing. Richard Dawkins, can I get a proper definition, please? The weak and the strong, who got it going on? Lived in the dark for so long. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on. Creationism is dead wrong. The weak and the strong, who got it going on? Whoever leaves the most spawn. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on. Creationism is
erroneous.
I hear some people complain, like, I don't want to be an ape. I never came from monkey DNA. I believe God made me in a day. Jesus saves. Yeah, he's great. But stop being afraid to use the reason he gave you to let science solve some giant problems and find some final results. I think it's time for y'all to let your minds evolve and listen to a different kind of silent call. The kind that comes from pine trees and not pine saw. I'm talking about the mystical vision that Einstein saw, wondering at the infinite depths of divine thought and realizing that scripture could never define God. Because if there is a personal God, then he's been jerking off. So why would he bother designing an albatross when natural selection already does such an excellent job just by balancing benefits and costs? I say banish God into the gaps if he can't help us understand the simplest facts. I want a relaxed God of infinite naps. We'll be alright without him. Just give us a chance. The weak and the strong, who got it going on? We lived in the dark for so long. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on. Creationism is dead wrong. The weak and the strong, who got it going on? Whoever leaves the most spawn. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on. Creationism is dead wrong. Dead wrong. See, everybody's always talking about, do you believe in evolution? Do you believe in creation? Nobody believes in evolution. You either understand evolution or you don't. It's nothing to believe. Something to perceive, feel, experience. Do you believe in gravity? Come on. You can see it with your own eyes. Just gotta look. Look deeper. Deeper than that. Ah.
On the next episode of Skeptically Speaking, we talk to Sherman K. Stein, mathematician and author of Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. We learn what makes human beings so susceptible to social influence, and how to guard against the common tricks that are used to manipulate us. And on Speaking Up, we take a skeptical look at exercise with personal trainer Matthew Liddell. That's next week on Skeptically Speaking, Friday night at 6 p.m. Mountain Time at skepticallyspeaking.com.
Wow. welcome back to Skeptically Speaking. I'm your host, Desiree Schell. We're joined today by Baba Brinkman, artist behind the Rap Guide to Evolution and the new rationalist anthem Off That. And let's go to a question from the website.
Do you think that your experiences as a tree planter gave you a love of the natural world and a deeper understanding of evolution? Or is it more difficult because you're hanging around with hippies? That's from Carrie in Vancouver.
Well, I think it gave me definitely an appreciation for the natural world. And I when I was a tree planter, I like to try to be out there as much as possible with my eyes open and sort of take it all in. No naturally selected bear encounters or near death experiences to speak of, really. But yeah, that, you know, hanging out with a lot of hippies does immerse you in the world of woo and spiritualism and homeopathy, and you know, the alternative views are richly represented in that world. And I think it took making a bit of a break from that psychologically to get skeptical for me.
And we have a question from the chat room.
This is from Zen Monkey. Question is, do you enjoy MC Frontalot and Nerdcore? Do you consider yourself part of Nerdcore?
I'm not extremely familiar with it. I'm familiar with the existence of Nerdcore, and I've listened to MC Hawking a bit, and I can't really say that I know any of MC Frontalot's songs. My general impression of Nerdcore is that it hadn't really matured artistically when I was listening to it. To me, it came across as a little bit gimmicky, and I've been compared to it, and you know, it's probably ironic to hear someone who's done a concept album on evolution talking about something being gimmicky, but you know, I think it's got potential to grow into a full-fledged art form, Nerdcore, but I think it started off as a very self-conscious piss take, and you know, the stuff about science and physics I like, but a lot of Nerdcore is about being antisocial and hobbits and Star Trek and stuff like that. And a lot of it I see is quite frivolous. So, you know, that's my general take on it. I won't dismiss the whole phenomenon, but there's parts of it that I like better than other parts. And I don't necessarily think all of their lyricism is up to par from what I've heard. But, of course, all of rap's lyricism isn't up to par either.
You know,
there's always gems and diamonds in the rough.
I have something, actually. We've had an email question on that topic.
Hip-hop is a tradition of performers using their songs to criticize other rappers. Your songs challenge things that are large and amorphous, like scientific illiteracy. Do you see yourself as part of that tradition? And that's from Nick in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Being combative, confrontational, outspoken, that's part of the hip-hop tradition for sure. And sometimes that takes the form of rappers taking a shot at an individual other rapper that they disagree with. But other times, I mean, Public Enemy is an overt political criticism of a whole sort of side of American life. Or when they came out, they were challenging the status quo in a way that felt really refreshing and bold, and saying things that no one else had either thought of or dared to say. And you know, that's my favorite thing about rap, is when it's bold and outspoken and unashamed of speaking truth to power. And I see sort of promoting science and skepticism as a form of speaking truth to power, actually.
Audience, if you'd like to ask a question, email live@skepticallyspeaking.com or tweet Skeptical Radio. So, at this point, do you see the Rap Guide to Evolution as an outreach project or
yeah,
something else?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it's definitely always, it's had the agenda to raise consciousness about evolution from the start. I was never shy about that fact. I mean, the goal is to try to get evolution across as accessible as possible, a way that is entertaining, creates a laugh out loud experience, but also has the people who see the performance leave understanding evolution better and sort of able to relate it to their everyday lives and think about it as something that is relevant to everything around them rather than just a scientific concept or something that was relevant to people up until, you know, cavemen invented culture, and then it ceased to be relevant. So it's just a sort of archaic fossil talk or whatever. So I've felt like the places that I've done the performance that have had the most impact have been places where people feel like they're under siege. Like, for instance, in America, in the South and in Central Pennsylvania and in Central California. And you know, you speak to biology professors and they're like, we get heckled by creationists in our classes nonstop with these inane questions. And there's just this siege mentality. You don't get to celebrate Darwin overtly and say he was an amazing, you know, brilliant, far-seeing scientist and taught us so much and was right about so much before anyone had really caught on. You know, people have to talk about Darwin in hushed tones, apologetically. And that's really what I want to promote is, you know, celebrate this. It's a great idea.
So you don't ever worry that you're preaching to the choir? This is sort of a morale-building exercise as well.
Well, where I've performed the show the most is in the UK. So far in the last year and a bit, I've done it in America, Canada, in Scotland, in England, in Hong Kong, and in Australia. And I find that in the UK, mostly it is preaching to the converted, preaching to the choir. But, you know, that's sort of good. It's good sort of training wheels for me, you know, to get confident with it and learn the ins and outs of the show and you know, what to say to people's responses and things like that. I feel like doing it in the UK made me better prepared to do it in America, where I'd be more likely to be hit with objections. But I don't want to just do it in safe places, for sure.
It seems like this outreach, it wasn't really a one-way thing, because your new single is called Off That, and it's billed as a rationalist anthem. So you went from being, you know, just sort of basically aware of evolution to writing a rationalist anthem. It's a bit of a jump.
Yeah, it was a bit of a fast one as well. Some of my friends and family back home say they feel like I've gone through some kind of massive conversion or something, because I didn't really used to bang on about this stuff a year and a half ago. But for me, I can sort of retrace the steps that took me from where I was a couple years ago as sort of just curious and what I considered myself to be open-minded about lots of things that I now sort of don't feel like have much basis in reality. But it's basically, I was 100% clear that evolution was an accurate description of where we came from and how the natural world works. I've been clear about that for a long time. And so then when you get down to it, you're like, okay, well, how do you know that? And then that comes down to the scientific method and all the ways in which the evidence can be tested and verified and predictions can be tested. And once you've concluded that the scientific method is the bedrock on which the reality of evolution hinges, evolution intuitively makes sense to me. So there is sort of a sort of subjective, objective, link going on here,
right?
You know, I would have my sense of reality shaken to its core if anything presented itself that called evolution into question. But as far as I've read, nothing even comes close, and nothing I've seen does either. So then once you trust the scientific method as the best way that people can get access to to reality, to what's really happening, to the actual causes of things, then you start to become aware of other places where the scientific method is under attack. And that's how I sort of got curious about skepticism, which is not something I'd ever really noticed or cared about. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a skeptical community or whatever 2 years ago. But when you read about creationism and the sort of systematic attack on the scientific method from creationists, then you come across other people who are pointing out that there's also a systematic attack on the scientific method from climate change deniers. And there's also a systematic attack on the scientific method from homeopaths and from people who believe in psychics. And there's this whole sort of science is an insufficient way for us to understand the world because this other paradigm exists in parallel with it and it can't get access to it, and all this sort of sophistical double talk. And you start to see all the connections between the ways of thinking that call science into question and the ways of thinking of science, which is to call everything into question, test it, and then actually keep the things that work and reject the things that don't, and sort of have accumulating, sort of continually resolving and clarifying picture of reality that tests and affirms things and doesn't just sort of let it all stir about as this great amorphous celebration of ignorance, which is how I see the other side sometimes.
You can turn a phrase, sir. If you'd like to talk to Baba about his journey from hippie tree planter to someone who is obviously a shill for Big Pharma, email live@skepticallyspeaking.com or tweet Skeptical Radio. And while you're thinking about all the brilliant questions you'd like to ask, And before we talk any more about the song, let's listen to it. This is Baba Brinkman's Off That.
Welcome to the future Geek Pop 3. Yeah. Better find them a nice soft place to land. Cause they sound high. They're coming down. Find them a nice soft place to land, right? Pseudoscientists. Pseudo mystics. Come on now. Pseudo psychics. Come on now. It's all pseudo. Come on now. It's all pseudo. Come on now. It's all pseudo. Come on now. I want tomorrow to be better than yesterday. I'm all about technology. So if you say slow it down, I'ma say fast forward. And if you want the benefits but not the process, then you're hypocrites. Everybody's wish list is for new toys and tools and better medicines. And you can have this wish, just ask the methodological naturalist. And if your spouse gets sick, consult professionals, never know this is. Deep down you all know this. Jay-Z thinks I had to borrow this to make sure tomorrow is filled with a bit less moronic.
Whatever scientists can discover, you want that. When it's justice and life and death, you want facts. When you feel threatened by science, it's all bad. And you can't bring the future back. Mysticism and pseudoscience, we off that. Placebo effects and magic are off track. Religion and superstition, we off that. Cause you can't bring the future back.
Tell them fools, get off me. Fraud, we off that. Quacks, we off that. Homeopathy, hell yeah, we off that. Is you still on that? You should read that science. A trick or treatment, they're not bad. This ain't black versus white, it ain't east versus west. It's about the scientific method against myths. It's colorblind justice and double-blind tests. So you can't make claims if you lack evidence. You say it suits me best, but you haven't ruled out those placebo effects. And it's sadistic. Peddle false medicines to poor sick kids. And yes, it's been tested. Prayer doesn't work against illnesses. Well, drugs as you want. Trying to use magic wands and a rock to detect bombs. Punks, people die when you guess wrong. That's why we got double-blind tests to detect frauds. Same with homeopaths and psychic mediums and other phonies and quacks.
Whatever scientists can discover, you want that. When it's justice and life and death, you want facts. When you feel threatened by science, it's all bad. And you can't bring the future back. Mysticism and pseudoscience, we off that. Placebo effects and magic are off track. Religion and superstition, we off that. Cause you can't bring the future back.
Tell them fools, get off me. Fraud, we off that. Ghosts, we off that. God, we off that. Yeah, we off that. Is you still on that? You should read Dan Dennett and Dawkins, they're not bad. And I don't give a fiduck, a bit doubt the fidaith you used to have. You can choose your path, and I don't give a if you meditate. Just don't try to claim you can levitate. There's some physical laws you can never break. That's why they're called laws, no exceptions made. And I don't give a fiduck, a bit doubt the visions you probably had. You're just a copycat. And yes, I'm aware this is a copy rap. It's like evolution, right? We all adapt. So I don't give a if you hallucinate. Just don't try to make any truthful claims unless you can show us the proof we crave. Cause no aliens ever flew my way. So now it's time to relax your mind and learn a couple science facts.
Whatever scientists can discover, you want that. When it's justice and life and death, you want facts. When you feel threatened by science, it's all bad. And you can't bring the future back. Mysticism and pseudoscience, we off that. Placebo effects and magic are off track. Religion and superstition, we off that. Cause you can't bring the future back.
Tell them fools, get off me. Spells, we off that. Your call, we off that. Astrology, hell yeah, we off that. Is you still on that? But we'll still debunk frauds, cause we're still on that.
Welcome back to Skeptically Speaking. We're here with Baba Brinkman. So, Baba, in Off That, just so you know, I've listened to this song way too many times now. I am absolutely addicted to this song. And my favorite line is, if you want the benefits but not the process, then you're hypocrites. Can you just explain that?
Well, I mean, it's not. I'm definitely not the first one to make this point, but I think a lot of people who dismiss science or attack it or, you know, want to undermine it in some way also enjoy huge benefits from it and aren't willing to give up those benefits and don't think of the benefits that they get from medicine and from technology as having anything to do with the thing that scares them so much. So, you know, a homeopath, a creationist, a climate change denier, perfectly happy to take all of the benefits of science until science, you know, says something that seems threatening or inconvenient to them. And then it's all about how, oh, scientists, you know, they can't tell us about how anything about how the world is, but they sure can offer some nifty solutions when we need them. And I do see that as a form of hypocrisy. You know, it's sort of, you know, take it when it works for you and reject it when it doesn't, but don't recognize that there's the same process providing the benefits as providing the, you know, the scary side.
So do you think a song like Off That, which touches briefly on a bunch of different pseudoscience and other topics, do you think it has a different effect on people than the Rap Guide?
It's a lot more combative than the Rap Guide is. You know, I think Off That has given people the impression that I'm sort of a ranty, angry atheist, which, you know, is something that I can play that role if I need to. But the Rap Guide is much more sort of a celebration of Darwin and is much more on the positive. But Off That, I think a big thing that inspired Off That for me was the book Bad Science by Ben Goldacre. I didn't really feel indignant about pseudoscience. I just thought it was silly before, you know, until I read Bad Science. And Ben Goldacre is so good at pointing out all the ways in which irrationality and the dismissal of the scientific approach to medicine, evidence-based medicine, is costing lives, causing huge amounts of suffering, you know, causing just people to die from things that are so preventable and so straightforward, and the degree to which we can make evidence-based medicine the standard is the degree to which we can alleviate huge amounts of suffering and death. And that's just a really simple, straightforward presentation of all the evidence and facts around that and in Bad Science. So, you know, that book made me sort of mad and angry and up in arms, and I know that was his intention. He's being polemical, and it really did work. So, you know, I used to be like, yeah, you know, we'll let the people who really feel strongly about this trivial issue fight it out. And then when I read that book, I thought, all right, you know, it's actually a moral imperative to speak up on this, for me anyway. So that's why I wanted to make the song Off That, and why, you know, when it comes up, I do feel like I need to speak out on it.
Do you feel that you have sort of a moral obligation to write a rallying cry for rationalists?
Well, I think if I didn't, I would have been morally, it's not the case that I would have been morally derelict if I had failed to. But on the other hand, you know, I felt like I was in a strong position to, because of, you know, that's sort of my job. I'm a popularizer of, you know, academia and complex ideas. So Canterbury Tales, evolution, skepticism, you know, whichever one comes across my desk next, and I say, you know, everybody needs to know about this. When I read the Canterbury Tales, all I thought was, how come everyone doesn't know these stories? They're so relevant and so interesting. And, you know, same thing for the theory of evolution. It just baffles me that people are still feel like it's controversial, that's where the natural world was formed, through natural selection. And it's the same thing with skepticism, especially with evidence-based medicine. It's just, you know, everybody should read Bad Science and everybody should read Trick or Treatment, and it's time to, you know, out with the old and in with the you know, reality-based when it comes to people's health. That's when there's actually, you know, if there's no stakes involved, this is the thing, when people talk to me about, you know, religion, spirituality, you know, the belief in the supernatural, as long as there are no stakes for anyone, then believe what you want. As soon as there are some stakes in terms of someone's health, someone's life, even someone's time, then, you know, that's when we start to measure what are the costs of the beliefs that you have, and is it worth holding them, even if they make you feel good, with the knowledge that, you know, that people can be harmed by them.
We have a caller. It's Dave from Edmonton.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead, Dave.
No, I just had a question for you, Baba. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on Thomas Kuhn, if you have any, just about the idea of scientific paradigm shifts, and that maybe, like, the structure of science isn't as straightforward as it seems, where it's like we have this thing that we should get behind and support, you know. Actually, what we have is something that's kind of like socially constructed and something that is problematic, but it's the best we've got, right? So.
Yeah, I haven't read Thomas Kuhn myself, but I've come across references to him. And, you know, It's a perspective that I used to actually quite vocally advocate. A couple years ago, I would have said, you know, there are things out there that science is currently absolutely incapable of getting access to, and that is what explains the supernatural and precognition and telepathy and all of these things. You know, I had a balanced view of, you know, how could all these people possibly be completely wrong? Therefore, there must be a way for the scientists to be right, having figured out so much, but, you know, hit the limitations of their method of inquiry, and all these other people can be right at the same time, having found access to some, you know, realm of knowledge that science so far hasn't found a way to measure. But what's changed my mind on that, basically, is reading some unapologetic looks at the actual evidence when it comes to things like homeopathy, for instance, or like telepathy and psychic phenomenon. When you actually put it in the laboratory and you say, if there's some basis on this, then there should be something measurable. And it always seems to disappear and wither under scrutiny. And the more you see that pattern of, you know, it's hard to explain why it would always disappear and wither under scrutiny, why the testing would reveal it to have no effect. And, you know, the whole, like, paradigm shift argument, it just seemed flimsier and flimsier and flimsier to me, because I thought, you know, why wouldn't it be measurable ever? Is it sort of like trying to hide from us? Is this like a trickster paradigm? Or is it that it's actually people, having delusions or having, things that they need to believe that they invent evidence for through the placebo effect, through regression to the mean, through false memories, things like that. It just seemed that those explanations just seemed more and more feasible to me than the sort of super complex paradigm, quantum computer paradigm portal arguments that I used to sort of be like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if that was true? But when you actually look, the closer you look to the evidence, the more it sort of disappears. In my view, anyway.
Like so many things. Baba, that's our time for the show. Thank you so much for being on.
Well, it was a great pleasure. I enjoyed the discussion immensely. And now I'm going to go to sleep. Because it's 2 a.m. here in Britain.
Right. And why are you in Britain, quickly?
I am in Britain as part of a tour. I was performing the Rebel Cell last weekend, and I will be performing the Rap Guide to Evolution on Monday night at the Greenwich Theater.
And you can find everything else you need to know about Baba Brinkman at babasword.com. And you can find out more about us at skepticallyspeaking.com. There are also links to our Twitter feed, our Facebook group, and to iTunes, where you can subscribe to the show and or write a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Skeptically Speaking.
Bring it on. The skeptics await your letter. Your call, tweet, homing, pigeon, whatever. Shell gonna raise a little hell, break the spell of Pavlov's bells, cause we're skeptically speaking, online reading tarot cards and witches, psychics, and their spoon-bending mind tricks, all the humbug, flim-flam, frauds and shams, the charlatan, who, I don't think you understand, it's the hocus-pocus, out-of-focus locus, eroding the brain, making gains on the hopeless, let the crystal ball fall, smash on the floor, leave the pieces alone, we don't need them anymore, just a microscope, telescope, magnifier, reading in between the lines of these lies, bring it on. The skeptics await your letter, your call, tweet, homing, pigeon, whatever. Desiree Shell gonna raise a little hell, metaphorically that is, cause we're skeptically speaking.
On Skeptically Speaking, we discuss a wide range of skeptical and science topics with a variety of experts. But I'd like to remind you that you, yes, you personally, are invited to join us on air every week for Speaking Up. Because let's face it, outreach is a part of skepticism. We all do it, whether we're talking to our parents about why they shouldn't buy into that multi-level marketing scheme, explaining the misinformation around vaccines to our coworkers, or forwarding that Snopes entry on why typing in your PIN number backward on the ATM machine does not, in fact, summon the police. But if you want to take your skeptical activism one step further and reach a broader audience, we're here for you. Do you have an event coming up that you'd like to promote? Or maybe you're a blogger that's been doing some great work and you'd like to talk about it? Or you'd just like to get some experience speaking publicly on a science or skeptical topic? What better way to get some real-world practice than on a friendly, rational radio show? If you're ready to have your say, do send an email to feedback@skepticallyspeaking.com. Put speaking up in the subject line, tell us a bit about what you'd like to discuss, and we'll contact you to set up your very own 10 to 15 minutes of on-air goodness. We're looking forward to hearing from you.